Blog Talk Radio.
If tomorrow all the things were gone, I'd work for all my life, and I had to start again with just my children and my wife. Thank my lucky stars to be living here today, but the flag still stands for freedom, and they can't take that away. And I'm proud to be an American, where at least I know I'm free. And I won't forget the men who died, who gave that life to me. And I Tennessee, across the plains of Texas, from sea to shining sea, from Detroit down to Houston, and New York to LA, where there's pride in every American heart, and it's time we stand.
Welcome to another episode of the Sharia Crime Stoppers Action Line. We have a very important conversation for you to participate in this evening. But first of all, let me welcome our co-host, Eliza Jane. Good evening, Eliza Jane.
Hey, Mo, how are you doing tonight? Really excited about this interview that we did with Robert Muse. What an incredible individual and an incredible organization. So this is going to be a great discussion tonight.
I agree. Let's set the stage if we can. Those of you that have been with us before know that Katie Hopkins was with us a few weeks ago, and she spoke about the deteriorating situation in Europe and the UK, where people are arrested because they disagree, because they have a certain political position. They're actually arrested for hate speech or hate crimes. And we know in Canada we have a deteriorating situation there related to putting people into courtrooms because they have opinions that differ from the state government. I know a lot of Americans think we have free speech and this will never happen in America. Well, you know what? There is... This program tonight is very important, and it's about the legal system, what's left in the legal system in America, what is threatening that, and we're going to talk about thought police. So in the state of Michigan, we have an attorney general who has instituted a hate crimes unit with an attorney in charge of it, and they plan to go after people that they think are offending other people with their thought and their words. and go after them for hate crimes. And our guest tonight is Robert Muse, and he is an attorney with the American Freedom Law Center. He and his partner, David Yerushalmi, are experts in constitutional law litigation, and we're going to bring Robert in. Before we do that, let me remind you that there are times when we can get a guest, but not at 7 o'clock on a Friday night. In those cases, we will pre-record an interview, and that's what we've done this evening because of the value of the words you're going to hear. It means that when the interview is over, the expert, Robert Muse, will not be with us for Q&A, but Eliza Jane and I will certainly make comments and welcome your calls. There's other things to talk about that relate to this topic once we're finished with Robert Muse, but I think you're going to really get a lot out of this interview. So let's go ahead and bring in Robert Muse.
We're very fortunate to have attorney Robert Muse from the American Freedom Law Center with us tonight. And he's going to be talking about a complaint that he's filed against the attorney general in the state of Michigan. She has formed a hate crimes unit and is identified that she will use the Southern Poverty Law Center to identify haters to be followed, monitored, et cetera. And Robert Muse is on the list. So Robert, thanks for joining us. Please come on and give us some background about yourself, and we're going to talk about the lawsuit.
Great. Yes, it's great to be with you. I'm the co-founder and senior counsel of the American Freedom Law Center. We are a nonprofit public interest law firm. We handle civil rights cases all across the United States, mostly defending conservative Judeo-Christian values. I founded the Law Center with my colleague, David Yerushalmi. David is an Orthodox Jew from New York. I am the Catholic guy here in Michigan. I have 12 children, as I like to say. They're all boys except for 10. So the motto of my home is, you know, blessed are you among women, as people would say. So we created what I think we could say is the nation's first truly authentic Judeo-Christian public interest law firm. We founded it in 2012. And as I said, you know, we handle cases all across the country defending the free speech rights, free exercise rights, Judeo-Christian values. A little bit of my background, prior to getting my law degree, I served on active duty in the Marine Corps as an officer for 13 years. I took an oath of office to support and defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic. After the election of President Clinton, actually, I became more aware of what was going on politically, and I was more concerned about our domestic enemies. And I realized that a lot of our values were being eroded in the courtrooms. And so I came home one day, and I told my wife, and even though the Marine Corps was my entire career, what I want to do for my entire life, my dad was a Marine, two other brothers Marines, I told her, I'm going to go to law school. And she was shocked, so I kind of had a change in my career. And I actually went to law school while I was on active duty as a captain at the University of Notre Dame. Graduated, and I've been doing this type of litigation, defending our constitutional rights against domestic enemies in federal courts for almost 20 years. I've never had a desire to be a lawyer. I don't particularly care for lawyers, which is why I tend to describe myself as not necessarily a lawyer, but as a Marine with a law degree. And so that's how I approach the type of litigation that I do and that David and I do. We're pretty aggressive. Just give you an idea of some of the cases that we've done and why, as you indicated, you know, we're on the Southern Poverty Law Center's hate list. And that being because we are, quite frankly, we're successful. We're successful at defending those conservative Judeo-Christian values, which the Southern Poverty Law Center dislikes. So, like, for example, in Michigan, we recently won a case, Bible Believers versus the Wayne County. Amazing case. And in that case, the Bible Believers went to the Dearborn Arab International Festival, one of the biggest Arab international festivals in the country. They went there with signs that were critical of Islam, and for exercising their right to free speech, they were attacked by members of the Religion of Peace, a mob of Muslim youths that literally attacked them with stones and bottles and rocks. And then when the Bible Believers complained to the Wayne County Sheriffs, the senior official there, told the Bible Believers that they had to leave or they would be arrested for disturbing the peace. And of course, the leader of the Bible Believers turned to the Wayne County Sheriff and said, well, what about all these people that are throwing rocks and stones at us and engaging in criminal activity? So they had to leave under threat of arrest. We sued. The district court judge upheld their rejection, saying that the threat of violence was sufficient to suppress their right to free speech, which is known as a heckler's veto. It's absurd. We appealed to the Sixth Circuit, three-judge panel, and in that case, the panel ruled against us, 2-1. Judge Clay, who is an African-American, a liberal judge, had been around for a long time, he wrote a scathing dissent. He understood the importance of protecting the right to free speech, particularly against those who are bent on doing violence to suppress the speaker. So he wrote a scathing dissent, and we filed what's called a petition for a hearing en banc, which was granted, a rarity. They're seldom granted. In fact, you probably get a better chance of making a case to the Supreme Court than getting an en banc, meaning the entire court. So now I re-argued the case to a 15-judge panel, and we won. And the author of the majority opinion was Judge Clay. And quite frankly, it's one of the best free speech decisions, and it's an en banc decision, so it has a great weight and precedential value. And we won on every issue: free speech, free exercise, equal protection. So it's those types of cases that we do, defending Christians, particularly against the hostility of Islam or those who want to side with Muslims. Just one other quick example, and just kind of give you a background of why the SPLC apparently considers us to be a hate group. We represented Pam Geller and Robert Spencer and the American Freedom Defense Initiative, their group, who are also marked and designated by the Southern Poverty Law Center, and in a case that we just won this past September in the Ninth Circuit, of all places. There was an ad campaign that the State Department was running. The State Department has this program called Rewards for Justice. See something, say something. If you have information leading to the arrest or capture of a known terrorist, you can get a reward. So they ran a bus ad in Seattle, Washington, that was called The Faces of Global Terrorism. And it had 16 faces of the FBI's most wanted global terrorists. Well, CARE, the Council on American Islamic Relations, and other pro-Islamic Sharia groups complained because they considered it to be hostile towards Muslims, because every face on the list was a Muslim or a Muslim-sounding name. Well, you look at the FBI's most wanted list at the time, they had 32 most wanted global terrorists. Well, 30 out of the 32 were people who engaged in terrorist acts in the name of Islam. The other two, by the way, one was a Black Liberation Party, and the other one was an environmentalist terrorist. No right-wing conservative Christians on the list. So anyway, so the State Department, being politically correct as it is, pulled the bus ad. So Pam and Robert ran the very same ad. Faces of Global Terrorism, sponsored by the American Freedom Defense Initiative, had the same images from the FBI's most wanted list. The ad was rejected, and we sued. And it went all the way up to the Ninth Circuit, and they claimed that it was demeaning or disparaging toward Muslims to have faces of global terrorists who happen to be Muslim. And so we sued, we won. The court found that the appropriately so, that the restriction was viewpoint-based. I mean, that's just a snapshot of, hundreds of cases we've handled, but likely cases why the Southern Poverty Law Center considers us to be a hate group, because we're defending the constitutional rights of political views,
right,
fully protected, but which they disagree with.
Robert, let's focus a little bit on just the challenges that you face, the depth of navigating the waters of the justice system. I know, for example, sometimes when you bring a case to the state, maybe a state like Michigan, there's a loss, and then you move on to the next level at the next level of the Sixth Circuit, etc. So it's not just writing a case. And by the way, I'm aware of, you only take cases that you really, really do your homework on. And the asset we're talking about here is a group that understands the law, understands how to progress through the law, and set precedents. So I think most people are not aware of all the detail that goes into building a civil case, for example, and getting it through the legal system. I'm aware, for example, that you've had cases where you represented individuals who were sued, for example, action was taken against them because they objected to the building of a mosque. And so I know about the Pittsfield case, and I know you're engaged in the Sterling Heights case. These are critical cases that reflect the ability for you, for individuals, to speak freely. So it's quite a unique skill set that you and David Yerushalmi bring to the efforts of free speech.
Yeah, thank you. And, you know, the thing, when you look at these cases, most lawyers aren't going to take these cases.
That's right.
The one that people who are defending don't, you know, have two nickels to rub together, many of them. We're a nonprofit, so we don't charge a penny for any of our legal services. We rely totally on donations. And so a lot of these clients, and, you know, one of the things that I want to make a point is that, you know, David and I couldn't do what we do if we didn't have courageous clients who are willing to put their name on a lawsuit and stand out in the public light and say, I object to this. This is a violation of my rights. So, it, you know, we obviously are then become the, you know, the voice for them and become sort of the, you know, the weapon side of it in terms of using our legal skills. But it still takes, you know, the courage of the individual plaintiffs, like those individuals in Sterling Heights you mentioned who were standing up to the construction of a mega mosque in their, you know, largely Chaldean Christian neighborhood. This mosque totally violates the zoning regulations, but, you know, political correctness and everything being what it is, the city caved in. And then so these, you know, private citizens, many of them Chaldean Christians, who object to this, they have a home, they don't want this giant building in, you know, in their residential neighborhood. You know, they have to deal with, you know, being named as Islamophobes and, you know, bigots and everything else. All the mudslinging comes along with it. So it takes courageous clients who are willing to stand up and fight. And actually, many of them, they can't afford the, you know, what a law firm like ours would charge in the private sector. Because many of these cases, as I indicated, even with the, like the Bible Believers, that went all the way up to en banc. Those cases take 3, 4, 5 years sometimes to complete. But one of the benefits, like for doing civil rights litigation, is that we can often, when we win, we will get recovery of our attorney's fees, which then goes back into the hopper to bring more cases. So the two cases I mentioned with Wayne County, for example, after that was all said and done, they paid us $300,000 in attorney's fees. The King County in Seattle, Washington, in that AFDI Faces a Global Terrorism case, at the end of that case, they paid us $200,000 in attorney's fees. So not only does that help to fill our coffers to allow us to continue to represent other people pro bono, but it also is a little bit of a stick that, you know, makes them think twice the next time they might want to violate the constitutional rights of any one of our clients or anyone else who might engage in that type of speech activity.
I think that's a really good thing for us to realize. It requires you to be so selective in the cases that you take. It requires you to have plaintiffs who are, you feel confident in their credibility and their ability to stand the pressure and go all the way through the process. These are multi-year processes, including the one that you mentioned in Sterling Heights. By the way, we want to be real specific here. You are defending in the state of Michigan, your lawsuit, which we're going to talk about. You're not just speaking for yourself. You're speaking for the other 30 people on the Southern Poverty Law Center's hate list that apparently the Attorney General intends to monitor and potentially harass. And by the way, we are directly connected because we are on the list. So in that list, Sharia Crime Stoppers is on the list as an anti-Muslim hate group, Southern Poverty Law Center recognized, and other groups that we participate with, like the Southeast Michigan Tea Party, are also on that list. So it's very, very close to home. Let's talk about the lawsuit in Michigan, if we can, and what you're trying to achieve with that lawsuit.
Right. And let me just make one point, because you brought up a good point. You know, as I stated, we're a public interest law firm. So while we do represent clients in specific cases, one of the bases for us to take a case, and quite frankly, it's under the IRS regulations as well, which allows us to be a charitable organization, is that it's not just a private dispute between, you know, two individuals or two parties. It's a dispute that has a public interest. It goes beyond the rights that we're protecting when we're defending, you know, Pamela Geller and Robert Spencer, or, you know, the Bible Believers. Certainly we're defending their rights in that case, but that case has repercussions well beyond just those individual parties, and we're protecting the rights of a much broader group, meaning we're defending the constitutional rights of the entire public. And so that's why it's in the interest of the public. And so same with this case. Back in February of 22nd of this year, the Michigan Attorney General and the director of the Michigan Department of Civil Rights announced an official policy directive where they're going to create this so-called hate crimes unit, whose focus was going to be on of going after criminal activity. They're designating a full-time prosecutor and a full-time investigator. And they said in this public announcement that they are going to be relying on the Southern Poverty Law Center. They had hyperlinks in this official announcement, which appeared on the government website, to the Southern Poverty Law Center's intelligence report, so-called intelligence report, that they issue every year, and to the Southern Poverty Law Center's hate map. And when you go, when you look at both of those documents, as you mentioned, your organization, but the American Freedom Law Center, when you go to the hate map of Michigan, the number one group listed of the 31 listed is the American Freedom Law Center. So she's made it very clear that she's going to come after these groups. And even in that announcement, which is so shocking, is the director of the Department of Civil Rights said that they're going to keep a database on all these groups. And an example that they used expressly in this announcement was they said there was this Patriot group that was handing out literature in Lansing during President's Day. Well, that is a fully protected activity under the First Amendment. But yet, if you engage in that kind of activity or any activity that you know, expresses a political viewpoint that the Michigan Attorney General and the department, the director of the Department of Civil Rights disagrees with, you're going to be subject to surveillance. You're going to be subject to you know, investigation. And at a minimum, your name and your group and their activity is going to be kept on a database. I mean, this is right out of a page right out of George Orwell's 1984. I mean, this is the thought police going after you. And just a little side note on the Southern Poverty Law Center. Southern Poverty Law Center, at one time, decades ago, did legitimate work. They helped to bring down the KKK. But they've become the propaganda ministry. And I use that term very specifically because that's what you know, Joseph Goebbels and the Nazi party used. This is a propaganda machine of the hardcore left progressives. It's George Soros funded. And unfortunately, because the Democratic Party now has become that, it really is the propaganda arm of the Democratic Party.
Right.
They spew the hatred. They spew lies, falsehoods. They are purveyors of hate. In fact, they have $500 million in assets reportedly. That's a half a billion dollars for people who are keeping count. And they have somewhere in the neighborhood of $120 million parked in offshore accounts. You got to ask yourself, what is a nonprofit doing parking, you know, $120 million in offshore accounts? I know Tom Cotton has recently called on the IRS to do an investigation of them. So this is a powerful, powerful private organization that is engaged in political propaganda of the worst kind. And you always see the so-called mainstream media relying on them because they tell a narrative that supports the narrative that the left-wing media wants to support. So they kind of work hand in hand. So this is, and you know, they convince, for example, Amazon. They have this Smiles program where you can contribute to a charitable organization. Well, you can't contribute to the American Freedom Law Center because Amazon specifically relies on the Southern Poverty Law Center list to exclude us. The Southern Poverty Law Center tries to prevent banks from doing business with us, mm-hmm. from cutting off credit cards. I mean, it's really insidious what they're doing. But, you know, it's one thing for a private organization like the Southern Poverty Law Center to spew their nonsense and malign us falsely. But now when the Attorney General mm-hmm. of Michigan, the top law enforcement officer, when you think of all political positions, the Attorney General, whether at the state level or at the federal level, they have to be objective, right? That's an office that requires there to be an equal protection of the law. They need to be apolitical. Well, not our Michigan Attorney General. And you saw what happened with Holder at the federal level. For goodness sakes, we're still seeing the repercussions of the deep state in the Department of Justice. But she is now, like Eric Holder did at the federal level, she is now weaponizing the state attorney general's office. So for her now to rely on the Southern Poverty Law Center to target groups using the resources of the government, she's now putting the government's imprimatur on this political propaganda nonsense. And because now the government's involved using government resources to target us, to surveil us, to malign us publicly, which she already did on February 22nd in their press release, that now triggers our constitutional protections, which is why we promptly filed our federal lawsuit in the U.S. District Court for the Western District of Michigan. We're challenging this policy directive on three bases, principally. Under our right to freedom of speech, because this has a chilling effect on our rights. It's going to subject to surveillance for engaging in constitutionally protected activity, government scrutiny. It violates our First Amendment right to expressive association. It's no doubt going to have a chilling effect on those who want to associate with us. who wants to associate with a criminal hate organization, right? Because now if the Michigan AG's office, the prosecution office of the state is involved, then we must be, you know, a criminal organization for us to be specifically identified. And we're challenging it on equal protection grounds because the basis for her targeting us is our political viewpoint. Everything we engage in is lawfully protected by the U.S. Constitution, but yet we're now in the sights of the Michigan Attorney General because she disagrees with our political viewpoints. That is dangerous. That's the thought police. That's what we're going to try to stop.
Very dangerous. Robert, I want to say thank you for your service, first off. And secondly, as you were talking through that, I wonder how many other states are paying close attention to your lawsuit to determine whether they follow suit with what the Michigan AG did in creating their own thought police.
Yes, so, I think that's very much. In fact, I got a reporter had contacted me. I think he might have even been from Bloomberg or a real large news source, and he was tracking this across the country. And he was really interested in our lawsuit because he sees this as really sort of the epicenter. Because this is really the first time that a state attorney's general is relying on the Southern Poverty Law Center, so-called hate list and hate map. And in his sense, from his research, is that, you know, what happens here could have repercussions in other states like, you know, New York, California, you know, the ones that you would expect, Massachusetts,
Minnesota.
I wouldn't expect, you know, Texas, Oklahoma, or any of those, you know, those places to follow suit. But certainly there's a long list of other states that could be following this, depending on our success here in Michigan. So this is an important issue to fight. You know, it's very interesting because how I found out about it, because the release came out, the official announcement came out on a Friday afternoon, which is, you know, typically when they want to release that type of information. And I got a voice message from a reporter from the Free Press who wanted my comments, it was the Detroit News, wanted my comments about the fact that now the Attorney General has considered us a criminal organization, is going to come after us. So that's, I mean, that really, even from that reporter's question, what the public perception is of what the Michigan Attorney General's office is doing. And I remember that weekend, I was fuming mad.
Yeah, I bet.
I think it was like Sunday evening I came down to my wife and I said, I'm going to sue him. I'm not going to stand for this. And so, you know, that's one of the benefits of being a lawyer or a Marine with a law degree is that, you know, sometimes you just sit back and you're watching this stuff go on. You're shaking your head. What can I do? Well, I file civil rights litigation, civil rights lawsuits, and we've had some good success.
So excellent.
And that's the other point. You know, we don't win every one of our cases. And anyone who says they win all their cases, they're either a liar or they take easy cases. So, but it's important just to be in the fight. It's important to say, you know what, we're going to stand up to this nonsense, and I'm going to take a couple of swings. And I might only land a couple of punches, but I'm going to land a couple of punches. Even if I don't win the fight, I want you to know that we're in the fight, and we're not just going to go away.
Well, good. We're excited that you're doing this because this definitely needs to be confronted and stopped. Do you think the disruption going on at the SPLC right now is going to do anything to enable you to be more successful? Do you think they're going to have any changes in the SPLC that will stop them in terms of what they are doing and destroying the conservatives out there?
Yeah, I certainly hope so, because there's a couple of things with our lawsuit. The other thing about these lawsuits is they bring to public light certain issues that you know, people who might not be paying attention to it are now paying a little closer attention. Because one thing about civil litigation is you get a lot of earned media. People want to cover the lawsuit. They want to know. And so people are learning a little bit more about the Southern Poverty Law Center. Yeah. And what is this organization all about? And why is our attorney general relying on this group? And the fact that the Southern Poverty Law Center is now imploding, I think, is even of greater benefit. Because you see, you know, Morris Deese was fired unceremoniously in March. The president resigned. The head legal director resigned. There's this great article in The New Yorker, of all things, of somebody who had been working at the Southern Poverty Law Center, just disclosing what goes on there.
Oh.
Just the harassment that goes on inside, the fact that this is just a money-making machine. The more we can expose, you know, darkness to light, the more we will succeed. Because the Southern Poverty Law Center is dark. They are a dark organization. You know, they've had this past history that's given them a semblance of legitimacy, but it's only just a kernel of legitimacy. Most of them admit is illegitimate political propaganda nonsense. And I'm hoping, you know, that as more is being brought to light about the Southern Poverty Law Center, the more the media actually learns about it, the more that people become aware that this is an illegitimate group, and that they start calling on the media to stop relying on them, for these financial institutions to stop relying on them. You know, we were part of a group of nonprofit organizations across the country. There were 67 of us who signed and sent out an open letter to all financial institutions, national media organizations, and others to stop relying on the Southern Poverty Law Center. We went through detailed all the problems that this organization is having, and that they are an illegitimate organization and they should not be given the light of day. And so all this is happening all at the same time. So I think it's all beneficial, because our law, part of the reason why we bring these lawsuits that I mentioned in the public interest, is they're an opportunity to teach the public too about what our constitutional rights
exactly.
are.
Exactly.
So yep. That's why it's important to do as much media as we can, like you know, our interview today, so that people can become informed and know what's going on. I think the media mostly relies on people being uninformed.
Right.
And so the more they get informed, the more we can bring to light this evil that's going out there and the harms that this is going to cause, not just to my group, but to everyday Americans whose constitutional rights are going to be trampled upon. If she's willing to do this, the Michigan Attorney General, I mean, this is weaponizing the Attorney General's office is super dangerous, and we need to put a stop to that. So there's so much that goes into these cases that goes far beyond just, you know, winning a particular issue in court. There's a learning component of it. There's a protection of the public interest. Mm-hmm. And I hopefully, you know, through this, win or lose, the American people become more aware of the Southern Poverty Law Center and how this our Michigan Attorney General is really a you know, weaponizing her office in a way that next election cycle, hopefully the voters will bear in mind that this is not a person who is who's qualified for that job and should be removed.
What's been her response?
Oh, glad you asked. Because it's, you know, we filed our complaint the very next week. We filed it on the 28th. You know, she announced the policy on the 22nd. We filed our lawsuit on the 28th, and then finally spoke with that reporter from the Free Press, and she wrote actually a very good article, very objective, can't complain, about the lawsuit and about American Freedom Law Center and you know, all the aspects of our particular lawsuit. Well, the Michigan Attorney General didn't, you know, say, oh, you know, well, I apologize, you know, we're not going after groups like the American Freedom Law Center, you know, this is only about going, you know, she didn't make any public apology or mea culpa, or, you know, we didn't intend this to be viewed that way. No, this is what she said, and I'm going to read directly for this is from her Facebook. I actually amended my complaint to add this. This is what she said in her Facebook post, and she was referring specifically to our lawsuit, because she hyperlinked the link of the Detroit News article, and she said, quote, "Only in Trump's America do you get sued for pledging to prosecute hate crimes and pursue organizations that engage in illegal conduct against minority communities. I will never back down on my commitment to protect the safety of all Michiganders. Bring it." And so her spokesperson must be like, Miss Nessel, her name's Dana Nessel, you know, stop talking about these things. Because all she did here was confirm that she considers us to be a hate organization, to engage in criminal activity against minorities, and that she's not backing down, and she wants us to bring it. So we're bringing it, Dana Nessel. So you just keep talking. That's the one thing with these hardcore left-wing liberals. They like to run their mouths, and she does. And so I've seen some reports from the spokesperson now backing away from the whole Southern Poverty Law Center. But they can't, because they already put the links in their press release. They already expressly said so. And, oh, Dana Nessel admitted as much. In a Facebook post directly talking about our particular lawsuit. So we'll see
pretty
how
bold.
This works out. So you can see that she's not, there's no contrition. If anything, she's doubling down, and which is good, because I like a good fight.
Robert, we are called Sharia Crime Stoppers Action Line, and we try to get our listeners to not just get educated, but to take action. Wow, you are the action. You are taking the action, and this is a great example for us that people need to take action. I'll just go back. If you did not file the lawsuit, We would be, Jury Crime Stoppers has a Michigan connection. We would be having this conversation, theoretically. The hate crime director and her investigator could be collecting information, building a database about this interaction, acknowledging the fact that we do what we do, et cetera. And we could be continue to be under the shadow to basically get us to shut up and not talk about specifics related to Islam, Sharia compliance, and the incredible changes that have already happened and are happening in Michigan. So your action is critical. I want to make the point. I know you live in Michigan. You know, it's not far from where you are and where the Sharia Crime Stoppers roots in Michigan are from the country of Canada. Canada already has these kind of aggressive indictments and against private citizens who speak out. And we have listeners to this program who are from Canada who keep sending us information about that situation. So to the extent that the newly elected Attorney General and Governor of the state of Michigan choose to behave in a Marxist way, just like Trudeau in Canada, in a way, they're pursuing a North American concept without a border between Canada and Michigan, Canada and Minnesota. So I guess this notion of the incremental use of lawfare is a Marxist strategy that works in Canada, big time, and could work in Michigan, could work in Minnesota, etc. And that it's so important that you issue this lawsuit. I mean, it is precedent setting. I think you're prepared for a difficult process, perhaps in the state of Michigan, and you'll pursue it wherever you need to go. If in fact, the complaint is denied in the state of Michigan.
Yeah, we will. And you know, the unfortunate thing, obviously, for Canada, and the fortunate thing for us is we have this thing called the First Amendment,
right?
Which, you know, our constitutional protections. But you know, Ronald Reagan reminded us, you know, back in the 80s, that our constitutional freedoms weren't handed down to us, you know, through one generation to the next. They must be fought for and protected during each generation, lest they be lost. And so it's important that, you know, if you don't, it's like muscles, right? You don't exercise them, you're going to lose them. And if we're not exercising these First Amendment rights and standing up for them, we're going to lose them. And, you know, just to give you an idea how insidious this could be, I mean, we've seen it on the national level play out with this whole Mueller investigation. It's starting to learn what was going on behind the scenes, the intelligence agencies, the FBI, and these other law enforcement agencies really abusing the powers that they have to conduct surveillance, to do, you know, a host of other things that were politically motivated. And you can see how disastrous that can be. Well, this is sort of a smaller scale, not a smaller scale, but on the state level, what the Attorney General Dana Nessel is attempting to do. And, you know, we need to put a stop to it. You know, too quickly we see this idea of so-called hate speech, which, by the way, as a constitutional lawyer, I can guarantee you there is no category under the First Amendment called hate speech that's excluded from its protection. And rightly so, because who determines what's considered hate speech, right? That's what the Southern Poverty Law Center is trying to do. They say, well, this is all hate speech. You say something critical of Islam, it's hate speech. If you say marriage is between one man and one woman, it's hate speech. If you quote, you know, cite Leviticus, with regard to, you know, God's declaration of what homosexual acts are, you're a preacher. That's hate speech. Well, and then the next thing you know, hate speech morphs into hate crimes, right? And that's really what Dana Nessel's doing. She's making this point that, look, if you're going to engage in this speech that we disagree with, you are now crossing that line from free speech to hate speech to being a criminal organization engaging in criminal acts against minority communities and Big Brother's watching you. Well, we have a First Amendment that protects our right to speak our mind on issues and express our political viewpoints, whether they are popular or unpopular. In fact, it's the unpopular speech that requires the most protection under the First Amendment. And so that's what this case is, just to fortify our First Amendment protections. And that's what we do with the American Freedom Law Center.
Can you help us understand how people who are interested in this can follow the case, where they can get more information about your organization as this proceeds through the justice system? What would be a good way for people to follow you through a website and so on?
Right. Our website is AmericanFreedomLawCenter.org, O-R-G, and we try to keep it up to date on the latest cases. We have a case link where you can go to that case, and we typically will update it with recent filings. We have a Facebook page. You can, right through our website, you can go to the Facebook. Facebook tends to have things, you know, updated a lot quicker. When new information comes in, we'll post it up there. They can go to our website and sign up for our email alerts, and you'll get periodic alerts from us. We try not to bombard everybody's inbox with an inordinate number of emails, but we do send out alerts to announce important developments in cases, new cases, and so forth. So those are probably three ways, mostly through the internet. The beauty of the internet is to keep people informed that they can do that. And if I can put a plug, if they like the work we do and want to support us, as I mentioned, all our legal work is pro bono. We don't charge one client a penny for the work we do. We rely on generous donations from people who want to support our work. And if any of your listeners are so inclined to do so, on our website, there's a safe, secure way to do that as well. So we would appreciate that as well.
Liza Jane, you have any closing comments that you want to make?
Well, no, I think he just finished up with what I was going to ask him to do, is promote and tell everybody how they can make donations. So is it just on your website they can donate, or can they do it through Facebook as well? Or
There's places on Facebook where you can donate. Facebook, okay. I think, takes a percentage of that in some respect.
Oh,
so the best
way
to do that is to go through our website. We have a secure link. You can donate through PayPal. You can use credit card. It has an address there if you want to do it the old-fashioned way and put a check in the mail and drop it in. We are recognized by the IRS as a 501c3, so all donations are fully tax-deductible in accordance with the law.
Perfect. Good. I just wanted to make sure everybody knew how to do that. And that's excellent. Actually surprised you're still able to function on PayPal, but good for you. Probably afraid to tackle you.
And just one quick caveat or a side note to the point about tackling you. I did an interview with a student newspaper from the University of Michigan, which, as you can expect, is kind of left-leaning. And after the interview, it was a student journalist, and I kind of gave him a little bit of a nudge. I said, look, are you going to be objective? I've read a lot of your articles on your website, Michigan Daily, and they're not very objective. And I could tell he was like a little bit taken aback. He's like, that's your role as a journalist or a future journalist, you're a student. And so the story came out. It was actually a pretty decent story, but it was funny. At first, the title was Ann Arbor-based hate group sues attorney general. And then immediately after it went up, I saw that somebody put a giant correction and said group identified by the Southern Poverty Law Center as a hate group. Because everybody over there was afraid that, oh, no, the Michigan Daily, we can't call them a hate group. That's the Southern Poverty. So they corrected the title. So you can have an impact when you put a little fear in somebody. I think he probably saw the article go up and called his editor and said, you got to change that title. These guys are going to sue us. We're not calling a hate group. And so they put an immediate correction. So I thought that was, it was actually good. So I thought that was good to see that has an effect.
That's good. We are blessed to have you do what you do, because I know you've been very influential with American Laws for American Courts as well across many states. So I just feel so blessed that you are doing, taking on the cases that you are taking. And I pray people will go out and donate to help keep you going.
Well, thank you.
Thank you for doing what you do.
It's a blessing to have this opportunity. That's really, I look at it every day as I'm blessed to have this opportunity. God gave me certain gifts and talents, and I want to use them to build his kingdom on earth.
You're still doing Marine work, protecting the Constitution.
Yes, that's exactly right.
And
I
thank you.
Just change uniforms.
That's right.
Marine, always a Marine.
God bless.
Thank you. You too.
Enemies foreign and domestic, enemies within. That's what we're focusing on. I'm glad we have a Marine with a law degree on our side. And with that, we'll say goodnight to our audience and just follow the case and thank God we've got the American Freedom Law Center on our side.
Well, let me update that. We're not going to say goodnight. We're going to continue, but that was a recorded interview with Robert Hughes from the American Freedom Law Center. I think you would all probably agree that Robert is on our side. He's in the fight. He is a Marine with a law degree, and we're very, very grateful for his work and his energy. It's inspiring to all of us. Liza Jane, what are some of your thoughts on based on what we've heard? And I think you've done some homework on some other cases that our audience might be interested in.
Yeah, I did, Mo, and like I said, I was very blessed that we got Robert on for tonight's show, and he's quite amazing. But you know, while he was talking and listening to some of the discussions he had about Dana Nessel, your attorney general there in Michigan, and I was looking up some of the stuff that from an article the end of March, and it's from MLive, and it talks about how she's got an assistant attorney general, Sunita Dodamani, not doing justice by the name, I'm sure, but named as a lead prosecutor in the unit, and Special Agent David Dwyer. This investigative team is going to be going out and figuring out who's committing hate crimes. This article talks about Michigan had 456 hate crimes reported in 2017, up from 399 in 2016 and 309 in 2015. Well, who determines it's a hate crime? All right, so what I did from that point is I went out and I looked at what I tried to find what the hate crime law states. Now, I'm no attorney, I don't know law, but this is from Cornell Law School, 18 U.S. Code 249 Hate Crimes Act. Listen to this. This is where what Robert Muse is doing with American Freedom Law Center is so critical to understand and think about how great it is that he's doing this, because the law itself, let me read this to you. It talks about offenses involving actual or perceived race, color, religion, or national origin. Whoever, whether or not acting under color of law, willfully causes bodily injury to any person, bodily injury to any person, or through the use of fire, a firearm, a dangerous weapon, or an explosive or incendiary device, attempts to cause bodily injury to any person because of the actual or perceived race, color, religion, or national origin of any person. Think about that. That is what is legally defined, and it goes into a whole lot more. So, but that's the basics. That's the high level of what a hate crime has been determined to be. Tell me where hate speech is creating bodily injury to anybody. And yet Michigan's got an attorney general and an assistant attorney general and a lead prosecutor and a special agent to determine who these hate speech people are, qualifying it by way of the SPLC. Incredible. Absolutely incredible. There is no bodily harm. That's why we have the First Amendment. Thank you, Robert Muse, for taking this on and proving through constitutional law that this is just wrong and needs to be stopped now. And like I asked him, before other states decide, they're doing some great work shutting down some of these conservatives, we can also do the same. What are your thoughts, Mo?
Well, I think that's what you just said. Is a critical addendum to what we talked about with Robert. I appreciate Robert's energy, his skill set and his courage. I think it's really important to listen to the words of the Attorney General, and her first word on Facebook in writing was in reaction to the lawsuit in a Trump world. The notion that this is completely politically motivated would be obvious from that. Again, I would say that this is an example of we had a show a couple of weeks ago about is Minnesota going to be the first Sharia compliant state? Well, I would say that if we use the example we had from Katie Hopkins a week ago or two, where we talked about the UK and Europe and America and Canada, I would say Michigan is moving towards the front. I would also make the point that, you know, elections have consequences. Frankly, the Republican Party in the state of Michigan ran very weak candidates. In fact, the Republican candidate refused to talk about the hard issues, and the Democrats won. Now, in addition to that, the Democratic Party and the voters of Michigan also put, Rashida Tlaib into the Congress. And you know what, Rashida and Ilhan Omar are basically monopolizing the media, et cetera.
So they are.
These things have consequences. And frankly, we did say it on the interview. If, in fact, Robert Muse had not taken this action along with David Yerushalmi and American Freedom Law Center, we and 30 other organizations would be sitting in the state of Michigan trying to do the things that they've done in the past. You would have pastors who are not on the hate list, but who speak directly about Christianity, Christian values, what's in the Bible, etc. And all of those people would be under the shadow of the Attorney General and the Hate Crimes Unit. So we don't, you know, just the fact that he filed the complaint doesn't mean that it's going to be successful. It's going to take time, etc. But at least there's been a punch thrown. The fight is entered. We're not sitting there naked in terms of legal support. But I do want to repeat, this is where we're at. We're dependent on a handful of public interest law firms. We're dependent on a few good governors, like the governor of Florida, in comparison to the governor of Michigan, and the president of the United States, and his ability to clean up his own executive branch so that they can reestablish the rule of law. It's really a serious situation, and we're grateful for Robert Muse. By the way, before I forget, we do have some logistics. We have a phone number, and if anybody in the chat room or anyway, listening on the internet or anybody who's already called in, if you called in and you want to talk with us, you can push button one. But before you do that, if you're not connected by phone, you could go to the phone and dial 319-527-6706, 319-527-6706. Push one. We'll recognize that you want to be in the conversation, and we will be happy to bring you in, because we do have time now to talk about some other cases that are related to this subject and to the American Freedom Law Center.
Well, Mo, in terms of that, I'd like to go back to one they've got showing on their website, AmericanFreedomLawCenter.org. Folks, I would encourage everybody to go out and take a look at it. But one of their cases, which I am glad they took on, is about the Clock Boy. This case was one that just fried me when I heard about it, read about it, saw it. And I spoke about it on my radio show years ago, because it was back in 2015, the Clock Boy bringing that hoax of a clock that looked like a bomb with the conditions that we were living under the Obama regime. I still can't quite call him a president. But at the end of the day, the school got affected, the teacher was affected, and Mohammed, the father of the boy, took this case to court to try and prosecute the teacher for doing what she did in getting the boy arrested. Well, let me tell you this, and of course we all know that CARE, Council on American Islamic Relations, got involved, and President Obama brought the boy to the White House to congratulate him on building this so-called clock. Well, folks, I said it then, and I still believe it today. It was a test. They do these test runs, and this was a test to see what kind of a reaction would come. Well, they knew it was going to be, I don't want to say the word explosive, but you know, they knew. And they knew they'd try and get money out of it. They knew they'd create a lawfare. And thank goodness for American Freedom Law Center for taking this on, Robert Muse, because at the end of the day, and like he said, some of these cases take 4 and 5 years to get settled. He was successful in this one. Let me read this a little bit to you. The motion to dismiss was filed by lawyers from the American Freedom Law Center and the local counsel, Pete Rowe, on behalf of the Center for Security Policy and Jim Hansen. Now, listen to this. They actually, Glenn Beck, Center for Security Policy, and a local Fox affiliate, all to court with claims against all defendants that were ultimately dismissed. This was a success. They, let me see here, the appeals court not only affirmed and dismissed, but affirmed the award of nearly $200,000 for attorney's fees and costs, including AFLC's $67,238 in legal fees at the trial level and $130,000 in conditional legal fees for the appellate work. Well, Mohammed had sued Hansen, Hansen from Center for Security Policy, and Jim's no longer with them, but sued them for statements that Hansen made on the Glenn Beck show. So they really thought they had a court case. They really thought they could get some money out of this. And when CARE got involved, that was just a huge sign that it was going to be a big lawfare, and they thought they were going to get lots of money. Well, thank goodness, through this court case, the Texas Appeals Court specifically ruled that Muhammad had not made out a case for defamation because CSP and Hansen had based their statements in large part on the involvement of CARE, which the court noted, quoting first Shapiro, because they took Ben Shapiro as part of it as well, and then Hansen as an organization. The federal government had linked to Islamic terrorist supporters as unindicted co-conspirator in a terrorism case. We all know about that. So here's where it let me kind of take it one step further. So this case, and this is a quote from David Urashami, this case was a classic strategic lawsuit against public participation. Remember those words, S-L-A-P-P, SLAPP, a SLAPP case and should never have been filed. Of course, SLAPP is the strategic lawsuit against public participation. The Texas courts have affirmed this once and for all, and Robert Muse is quoted as saying, The AFLC was formed in large measure to take on Islamists like CARE, who use and abuse the legal system with their cynical form of lawfare to determine our constitutional liberties, notably free speech. We have confronted these lawsuits across the country in federal and state courts and have defeated CARE and its minions at every turn. Amen to that. When appropriate, that was my comments, inserted comments. When appropriate, we have won sanctions. This lawsuit has proven to be no different. We will continue to confront CARE and other Islamist organizations in any and all legal fora. Now, what is a SLAPP? Let me read you what a SLAPP is, beyond just being hit across the head. SLAPP, strategic lawsuit against public participation. These damaging suits chill free speech and healthy debate by targeting those who communicate with their government or speak out on issues of public interest. They are used to silence and harass critics by forcing them to spend money to defend these baseless suits. SLAPP filers don't go to court to seek justice. Rather, SLAPPs are intended to intimidate those who disagree with them or their activities by draining the target's financial resources. That's why we are so fortunate to have American Freedom Law Center, because they do it pro bono. They cannot drain the pockets of those filing these lawsuits. So God bless Robert Muse and David Urashami and their team of people that are taking these cases on to shut them down, make them go away, make them realize that they are actually breaking the law in doing what they're doing. So, Mo, this is just incredible work they're doing. And think about it. Yeah, I think you even said it. If it wasn't for them doing what they're doing, we could be defined as criminals. Hate speech, it's not hate crimes anymore. It's hate speech. I've hurt your feelings. Just like Katie told us last week, that it's perceived and you've hurt my feelings, so I can take you to court for defamation. I'm sorry, what? That's where the First Amendment has been such a perfect amendment to keep us able to speak, to be able to stand against this crazy stuff that's going on in America today. Mo, what are your thoughts?
Well, I think that what you said, what Robert said, should be hopefully
being buried into people's minds that are listening, and maybe they can position themselves in the same situation. We have one other case to talk about that we know about. Again, if anybody wants to give us a phone call, 319-527-6706. But let's just talk about another case that is, again, close to home. Imagine you live in a suburb of Detroit, and that suburb has been a drop-off place for years for immigrants from the Middle East. In fact, legal refugees from the Middle East placed by the federal government in Southeast Michigan. It turns out that if we talk about persecuted Christians, we've had Naren Onwea on. If you remember that story from maybe a month ago, Naren is an Assyrian Christian. There's an Assyrian Christian community of refugees fully supporting the American Constitution, living in the community. They're Al Chaldeans from Iraq, etc. The case that Robert Muse and David Yerushalmi have picked up is a case where they're representing seven citizens of the town of the city of Sterling Heights. And in that case, those seven citizens are looking for relief and suing the mayor of Sterling Heights and the people that wanted to build a third mosque in this community. The mosque proposal was rejected by the Planning Commission because it violated established Planning Commission guidelines. Unfortunately, the Attorney General of the United States had the U.S. Attorney for the Southeast Michigan join into a settlement proposal with the people who wanted to build the mosque to basically go after Sterling Heights as a city, commending them to spend taxpayer money to end the suit and allow the mosque to be built. The mosque was being built in the community in a residential area where Chaldeans who had escaped from Sharia-compliant people in the Middle East had lived. This residential area was going to be impacted by a building, 20,000-square-foot building, on a relatively small lot, with 65-foot minarets and a 60-foot dome. It was rejected, and then the mosque builder and the Department of Justice under Obama sued the city. It was settled. But seven residents basically have filed a lawsuit against the sitting mayor, his name is Michael Taylor, for favoring Islam repeatedly. So there's not equal protection under the law. There's a favoring of Islam, very important precedent setting for this lawsuit that Robert Muse is pursuing. Secondarily, their free speech was restricted because they were not allowed to express themselves in city council meetings run by Mayor Michael Taylor. So that is a case that is very important and precedent setting. It is the initial case was brought in the state of Michigan. A Obama-appointed judge dismissed it, and Robert Muse is taking it to the district court, District 6, outside of Michigan, in order to pursue that on appeal. It's very, very important that cases like this can be defined carefully with the expertise that Robert Muse and David Yerushalmi have. It is a 35-page document. It's very clear. It's very well written. And there's an opportunity to use the justice system. The reason we go into some detail here is I would just make this comment. I think in the situation we are here in America, lawsuits proposed to protect citizens' free speech probably pretty close to the top of the list. If we lose the ability to speak freely, if we lose the ability to challenge decisions that are made to build mosques when there has been no violation of anybody's rights and there's just violations of zoning laws, these are important things that affect us. My own comment would be, I think we need to focus on the court system. We need to focus on the executive branches of state government. If we're going to be in the fight, we need to look at priorities. I would suggest that lower priorities are the kind of things a lot of Americans are involved in. Being a precinct delegate in a state to get one more conservative person elected, of course that's a good thing to do under normal situations. If you have limited resources and limited money to contribute, it isn't clear that that better conservative in a state that is very progressive, like Michigan, is going to make a difference. So my suggestion is for you to think in your own conscience whether you are better served by supporting the executive who has the right approach, which if you live in Michigan, is not your governor, it's your president. Excuse me, making sure that President Trump is the president in 2021. Think about a Trumpless government, federal government in 2021 if he wasn't there, and make sure that you put your money where your mouth is and you work on the highest priority. So I would just challenge people, particularly people in the Republican Party in a state like Michigan or other states, be very careful. Be careful of thinking about the time and energy and money you would spend as a local activist, as a precinct delegate, and versus the time you would spend to make sure that Trump is reelected, to make sure that people like Robert Muse, who can take and protect you in a courtroom, have adequate resources to do the job. That's just my little editorial. Of course, we could have people disagreeing with that comment, but in my mind, it's something for you to think about, and you make your own decisions. Liza Jane, do you have any thoughts on that little comment?
No, I think you're absolutely right. It's incredible work that they are doing. It is required work. They have been very successful. And I'm going off of their website again, and basically they have been doing this for 7 years. January 23rd, 2019, they celebrated their 7th year. And I'm going to read you a little bit more about this, but I want to come back to Sterling Heights. Sterling Heights, like you said, was a lot of Christian Chaldean. Well, look what they did, you know, in turning that to build a mega mosque. So folks in Michigan really need to pay attention and stand up, stop the influence operations that are going on there. And you've got a local resource in Robert Muse. I mean, he sees what's happening and can be right there in a heartbeat to support any kind of efforts that are going against the Constitution within Michigan. And he's done it. He's doing it. So, and Robert Muse talked about the Bible believers, and I'm going to go back and I believe a lot of folks know about this, what happened in Dearborn with David Woods and Nabil Qureshi. I suspect that's who he was talking about there, and how they took on that lawsuit to defend Christianity. Two Christians standing there not doing a thing, but just talking to some Muslims, and to be arrested. So Robert Muse told us why he does it, from his Marine background to his Christianity, and he knew he had to stand up and do something, and we should be blessed for it. And looks like we do have somebody who's interested in joining the conversation. Mo, do you want me to bring him in? I believe
this is our friend Mitch.
Is this our friend Mitch?
Yes, hello.
Well, hello, Mitch. How are you doing tonight?
Well, I'm just enjoying another great program.
Thank you.
I know the American Freedom Law Center, and God bless them.
Yep.
And I've listened to Robert Muse on a number of occasions. I was involved in a hearing with the first litigation that went on with the mosque here in Sterling Heights. I just wanted to add something else as kind of a heads up.
Okay.
Sterling Heights is an official welcoming city. And in my mind, that's right next to one of these sanctuary city ideas.
Mm.
That was, of course, started under the Obama administration as Welcoming America. And these organizations are used to bring in unknown refugees, unvetted refugees. We had another.
Can I throw a question out there to you? Did you or Mo hear what President Trump is announcing that he'd like to do with some of these illegals? Did you hear this today?
Yes.
Sanctuary cities are going to be welcoming quite a bit, aren't they?
The president is he knows how to make people think.
Yes, he does. I thought that was brilliant, but go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Anyway, this welcoming idea, I mean, that's an organization every community should take a look at. And I mean, the Homocombe County here is a welcoming county. And there's other cities here in Michigan that are welcoming. And that to me is a code word for watch out. We're going to be changing your demographics whether you like it or not.
Well, welcoming creating a mega mosque to welcome them with is two different things. I'll let Mo jump in there. I think he had a question for you.
What I was going to do, I think there's a recent development, if I'm not mistaken, Mitch, and that is that the governor of Michigan, again, the person who is the boss of the attorney general that we've been talking about, the governor of Michigan has pretty much announced that she wants the entire state to be a welcoming state. So this welcoming campaign, which is an organized activity funded by George Soros and so on. By the way, just think about the progression here. The welcoming people are the people who legally brought 100,000 Somalis to Minnesota over a period of time. Those people all were encouraged not to assimilate into the American melting pot. So, of course, they became a voting bloc, and that's how we got Keith Ellison, and that's how we got Keith Ellison's replacement, Ilhan Omar, and that's how we got Ellison moving up to the attorney general. In the state, in Sterling Heights, you had the welcoming organizations, which unfortunately, we'll just say it, are people who are paid money per head to move unvetted refugees, primarily from Syria and the Middle East. We know for a fact that over a period of years, 98% of the people moved into Michigan under this legal process by the Catholic Services Organization and Lutheran Immigration Services, 98% of them were self-declared Muslims. And so when you put all of that into a community like Southeast Michigan, you get a first mosque, a second mosque, and the third mosque, the mega mosque, which is a case that Robert is involved in, and the case that the Sterling Heights mayor is in this lawsuit over. That's what happens from the notion of a welcoming city or a welcoming state. I just wanted to throw that in. Michigan is now officially a welcoming state. The doors open for legal and with the sanctuary states that are in Michigan, illegal immigration, not unlike the country that borders Michigan, which is called Canada under Justin Trudeau. So that's a little bit of a bigger picture, but I know that the interesting part for Mitch is that Mitch is on the ground. When he wakes up in the morning, makes his coffee, looks, goes out the front door, he is in that city that is under, in my opinion, under attack of civilization jihad.
Yeah, and just to add a little more, and I was heading in that direction about the proclamation.
Mm-hmm.
Governor signed an actual state proclamation on this becoming a welcoming state. And there are others that tried to bring in a fourth mosque. And I understand some of the comments that those that wanted to establish another mosque in Sterling Heights commented that it was a welcoming city. So that term has become a magnet. And in my opinion, I don't see any signs of assimilation. Everybody wants to have their own separate identity, separate community centers, separate teaching. And oh, by the way, English isn't even a second language. Some of these new Americans want to learn English at all.
Wow.
Well, a couple points on that, Mitch, and you're right in the middle of it. The 19th welcoming city in the state of Michigan is adjacent to Sterling Heights. It's called Troy. Troy is a welcoming city. We saw the proposal that was very polished, very high marketing value, to make it a welcoming city about a year and a half ago. It is now under a lawsuit. Same situation for denying a mosque, just like the neighbor Sterling Heights. So the pattern is there. CARE is behind all of this. CARE uses the threat of lawsuits, as we've heard from Robert Muse and even Mary's recollection of another case. CARE is there to threaten lawsuits, and typically, so we have another city under a lawsuit from CARE-inspired mosque builders. The city is right next to Sterling Heights. So it is a pattern. It is a repeatable pattern, and it is a way to have non-assimilating people establish themselves and typically get favored treatment. Again, the lawsuit of Sterling Heights says that the mayor of Sterling Heights regularly favors Islam, which denies equal protection under the law, and also, when necessary, has restricted free speech. So we have local free speech in a lawsuit as well as statewide free speech in Robert Muse's lawsuit against the Attorney General. So there's a real pattern here.
I'd like to add a little footnote to this pattern. Every year, the city puts on a cultural event. And right now, there are Islamic groups and even an out-of-city mosque that displays their wares at these cultural events. There's propaganda type literature being handed out, and it tries to soften up what Islam is all about. And we're under a bit of a siege here. They're coming right up through a corridor starting down there in Dearborn Heights, Hamtramck. They're coming up right through Warren, Sterling Heights, and unfortunately right next door in Troy. The significant difference between the Sterling Heights case and the Troy case, the council of the city of Troy, the city council, decided to not give in to the federal lawsuit. And they passed at a city council meeting, a resolution to put funds to defend themselves. And like Sterling Heights, there's all kinds of ethnicities. There's other mosques. There's houses of worship for Hindu. All kinds of diversity in these cities. And this is just another way of weaponizing the legal system, and it's got to stop. The only way I know of to stop it, Mo, you mentioned something about delegates getting together. We have local elections this year, so I want to encourage everybody, pay attention to your local elections. The president is trying to do everything he can to help America, and yet we've got local governments pulling the rug right out from under him.
Very good point.
Thank you, Mitch. You know, I want to make the comment. Mitch is a person who is on the ground, who is an activist. I know a lot of our other listeners are doing what they can locally. When we focus on a particular community and we go into some level of detail, it's really just to shed the light and get you to think about what's happening in your community. If you don't have a mosque, look for one. There's one coming soon near you. If you don't think you have Islamic immigration related to you, look where your local university is. Do you have a Muslim student association? You may not recognize just how close you are to this pattern. And what we're seeing is once the pattern happens, it does escalate relatively quickly. And there are very few people putting up any limits on this. And when they have to go to court, I think Robert said this, at least he said it to offline, there's a whole lot of lawyers in your community. There's a whole lot of lawyers in Michigan, because we know, because we want to try to get them, who will never touch a lawsuit where a private citizen or a town wants to go against CARE. The candidates, the lawyers in given states are afraid to enter a case against CARE. We've seen that. It's only when Robert Muse and David Gurislami and a few other public interest law firms get involved to even have a chance to fight back. So, Liza, again, I think we're probably coming to pretty close to the end. Do you have any concluding comments? You want to thank Mitch for his input tonight.
I do want to thank Mitch for his input. It's always good to have people on the ground reporting what's going on in their communities. And you're absolutely right. The local elections are a critical point where they can get others can get involved and understand what they need to do to stop this infuriating infiltration. But before we close, I would like to just kind of read a little bit more from their website. Folks, again, American Freedom Law Center. They do pro bono work. This is their seventh year. Andy McCarthy actually called them the leading public interest law firm fighting in America. Listen to what they've got on their website. This one just kind of jumped out at me. In biblical terms, the seventh year marks a sabbatical. And think about this, because he says that they are the first Judeo-Christian law firm. Him and David Yerushalmi being the co-partners on this. In biblical terms, the seventh year marks a sabbatical, time to rest and recoup, to take stock and to reflect and to recognize the omnipotent hand of God in all things. At AFLC, while we certainly have taken time to and to recognize God's hand in all we do, our seventh year has seen very little rest and indeed has been a year of court battles and victories day in and day out, with America's enemies not just at the door, but already on the inside doing harm. We at AFLC have not ceased in our efforts to engage those enemies in the courts at every turn. Listen to this last line. There is no other public interest law firm that has been as effective against the enemies of freedom, particularly those enemies who engage in what the Muslim Brotherhood itself describe as civilization jihad. God bless American freedom. And thank you, Robert Muse and David Yerushalmi, for all that you do.
It is a spiritual battle. It is good and evil. We think we know, we've recognized the evil, and we're grateful for people who are in the fight. It will take the aspects of a spiritual battle. As you know, by the way, as we close, let me remind you that we are continuing these Friday night shows every week. We'll be here again Friday night. On Tuesday nights, we have the webinar. The webinar is continuing on Tuesday nights. I just want to give you an update of the next 3 weeks. So on Tuesday nights, this coming Tuesday, we'll continue the enemies within. We've done four webinars on the enemies within the church. We will come back to that. The whole series is the enemies within, which is a term we've gotten, of course, from our friend Trevor Loudon. We're spotlighting the enemies within. And part of that will continue on the 16th of April, next Tuesday, when Brannon House will be interviewing co-founder for Sharia Crime Stoppers, David Boris, talking about America under siege. This is a full interview, and I think you'll find it very, very interesting. It is a webinar. At the conclusion of the webinar, there will be an opportunity to get questions directly addressed to David Boris and answered. On the 23rd, we'll move ahead to show you a documentary, which is a documentary you mentioned a week ago with Katie Hopkins, a couple weeks ago. Katie Hopkins talked about homelands. Homelands is the story of people who are forced out of the country they live in, or, for example, the state they live in. You heard a lot about why people might be concerned about living in Michigan if free speech is lost. There are people on the move, and this documentary is called Homelands. We will show it in its entirety. It'll be one of the first showings in the United States. And we're very grateful for Katie Hopkins for making that available to us. That is the 23rd. On the 30th of April, we're going to go back into the enemies within the church. The title of that is The Enemies Within the Church Must Be Defeated. And to be a roundtable discussion with Trevor Loudon, Liz Ure, who hosted our Catholic Week, Neil Holman, who hosted our event Evangelical Week, and Janet Levy, who just hosted our Jewish Week. And they will be talking in very practical terms about what needs to be done by what they're calling the remnant army. That is the people that understand the spiritual battle we're in, and they'll be talking about specific action items to continue the fight. And I guess one last point is, if you think you might be in the remnant army, if you believe this is a spiritual battle, let's keep all of this in mind, that divine intervention is probably what made America America, and it will very most likely take divine intervention and a lot of hard work on our part to sustain the United States of America. And so, again, we do mean it when we close with the song that we close with, God Bless the USA.
Tomorrow all the things were gone, I'd work for all my life, and I had to start again with just my children and my wife. I thank my lucky stars to be living here today, but the flag still stands for freedom, and they can't take that. Tennessee, across the plains of Texas, I'm free to